Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. We all love our pets, but hard as it may be to believe, they are rarely perfect, are they? Try as we might to train them and rid them of bad behavior, it often doesn't take. Maybe we can help you today. Joining me in studio is animal behavior expert, veterinary behaviorist with Veterinary Behavior Consultations, Dr. Deborah Horwitz. I want to get that title right, Deborah. Thank you so much for being with us. A veterinary behaviorist.
Correct.
What is the distinction between a veterinary behaviorist and an animal behaviorist?
Well, a veterinary behaviorist is a veterinarian, so I went to veterinary school, and then we take advanced training and pass specialty boards. Veterinary medicine has specialty boards like human medicine. We have them in oncology and internal medicine and radiology and dermatology and in behavior. So in order to call yourself a specialist, which is true in human medicine, to add that IST, like I'm an internist or a whatever, you have to pass an examination. And that examination is 2 days. And prior to taking the exam, you have to have a peer review article in an acceptable journal and write 3 case reports. So that's what a veterinary behaviorist is. Unfortunately, anyone can call themselves an animal behaviorist because that is not a protected term. So it could be a dog trainer that calls themselves an animal behaviorist with or without training. And there are people with PhDs and masters in animal behavior who call themselves animal behaviorists, and they are certified by another organization, and they're certified applied animal behaviorists.
All right. Well, it's clear you have plenty of training to do to do what you do.
Hopefully.
I'm sure we're going to get a number of calls and communications during the course of our program today. 382-8255 is our number, folks, if you want to ask questions about the behavior of your pet. 382-8255, email us at talk@stlpublicradio.org. We'll take a tweet at STL on air. All right, Dr. Deborah, what are the major behavioral issues that you are confronted with?
Well, in dogs, in behavior referral practice, one of the most common things that we see is aggression, whether it's to people or other animals. And in cats, probably the most common referred problem that we see is house soiling and maybe aggression between cats. But if you survey pet owners, about 90% of them actually have a complaint about their pet's behavior. And those are often perhaps even normal behaviors that are unwanted, like jumping up or barking or pulling on leash, things like that that are easy actually to change, but often people aren't aware of how to change them. So there's two differences. There's abnormal behaviors that are real problematic and maybe dangerous, and then there are normal but unwanted behaviors.
It seems to me, and this comes from personal experience, I must say, often we just give up. If we don't, after a day or two of trying to stop them from jumping up, they don't do it. We just say to the guests when they come in, the dog's probably going to jump on you. Be careful.
Well, I think most of us, number one, are pretty far removed from our rural roots. So we don't really understand why our pet engages in some of these behaviors like jumping up. And secondly, we're very verbal. So we talk to each other. And if somebody wants to hug you and you don't want to be hugged, you say, excuse me, I'd rather not, or you step back or whatever. And we can talk to one another. But our pets are not verbal. They respond more to really what is the cost and what's the benefit of what I'm doing. So if I'm really eager to see people, I'm happy to see them, and I jump up and they rub my ears, well, the cost.
Hey, this is pretty good.
Yeah, the benefit was pretty high. So first thing you really need to do is, well, why do they continue to do it even when I tell them no? And that's because there must be something rewarding for them. And also, they don't understand whatever it is you're telling them to do instead. So you actually have to spend time teaching the behavior you want instead of just punishing what you don't. So if you haven't taught the dog, whenever you greet me or anyone else, you sit. And if you sit, then I pet you. Or you have 4 feet on the floor. You have to stand still. You can't be wiggling around. And if you can't do it when it's easy, when you're just with your family, then you won't be able to do it when it's hard, when you're so excited. Oh, look, it's Uncle Bob. I love him. I haven't seen him in 3 weeks.
So it's just repetition. You take your dog or whatever and during quiet times, teach them to sit.
You teach them to sit, but after they can do it in quiet time, they have to be able to do it in noisier times. And so you have to have a robust response. And you also have to really realize and understand how learning takes place. So if you ask your dog to sit and he doesn't sit the first time, and you tell him three more times and then he sits, then your dog's learned that four times is the repeated cue to sit. So it really requires you to understand how to teach your dog new things and then to really understand why they're doing it in the first place.
Well, that makes an awful lot of sense. But again, I think people do become impatient, give
yes.
up, and they give up.
Yeah, but if they go to a good training class, they can really learn how to communicate with their dog in an efficient way. Training is the way we talk to our dogs.
Right.
And we talk to them by cueing certain behaviors with words that are mixed with actions.
We already have some phone calls.
Okay, great, I'm ready.
Not unexpected, and I'm sure people have real life, real world questions they want to get to you. So let's begin with Stacy, who's calling from St. Louis City, South City. Stacy, thank you for being with us. You're on the air.
Thank you. I have both a dog and a cat, and they both do something similar. My dog will get some kind of a little scratch on her arm, and then she just licks it and licks it and licks it until it becomes a sore. And we have taken her to the vet over and over again. We've wrapped it. We've done all these things. And the doctor says now it's become a obsessive-compulsive thing. And a similar thing with my cat where they think it was allergies originally, where they called it barbering. The cat would barber himself. And I mean, he got to the point where half his hair was gone, and it kind of comes and goes. But they said it started with an allergy, and it may, again, be some kind of obsessive compulsive disorder. So I'm just wondering if, you know, what you know about obsessive compulsive disorders in cats and dogs.
Well, let's talk about the cat first. There was a study that was done that looked at cats that were brought in for over-grooming or barbering, and mm-hmm. It has all sorts of different names, mm-hmm. and tried to figure out which ones were medical and which ones were behavioral. There were 22 cats in the study, and by the end of the study, only 19 of the 22 cats actually had a behavioral component to their licking. The rest, it was medical. And two of those remaining four, they were a combination of allergy and a behavior problem. So trying to figure out with cats, we have to really do some very extensive medical workup. And these cats had skin scrapings, and they were treated for fleas repeatedly. And they had a good food trial. Cats can often be allergic to food, and one of the things you see the most is that pulling out of the hair and barbering the hair. So I would suggest that you might want to go to a veterinary dermatologist. There's actually one here in St. Louis. His name's Dr. Paul Cacciola, so that might help you.
Okay.
And for dogs, dogs lick often because there's a lesion there. But if it's a chronic, sometimes dogs lick parts, the repetitive part of their body, mm-hmm. because they are either anxious, mm-hmm. so they're anxious about something going on in the house, or they don't have appropriate oral enrichment that satisfies their need. We feed our dogs a high-density diet. It doesn't take mm-hmm. them long to eat. What kind of dog do you have?
She's a mutt, but she's part Boston Terrier and, part a bunch of other things.
Okay. Many of our dogs, when we put down their food, they eat in, 5 minutes? Mm-hmm. But a lot of dogs like to do oral activities, and sometimes they substitute licking instead of chewing. For these dogs, one of the things you might want to try is you might want to get a food dispensing toy so that, what's your dog's name?
Penelope.
So that Penelope spends more time, a very cute name for a dog, spends more time eating her food, knocking around the food dispensing toy with her nose or her paws and running around and picking up those little pieces of kibble. And that may satisfy her need to do something orally.
Mm-hmm.
Again, some of these dogs do have deep-seated infections that need to be treated, and many of them also do have allergies that need to be treated year-round. It's also been shown that many dogs that have seasonal allergies, so they have allergies in the spring and fall, like many humans do, mm-hmm. often segue into year-round allergies, and they need allergy treatment all year-round, and they may even need allergy shots. So I hope mm-hmm. this helps you.
And so as far as the oral stimulation, does a like a chew bone, would that work for that?
But that doesn't last long enough. Mm-hmm. So it might, but a food dispensing toy is also mentally enriching because how do I get it out of here? So we don't really require our dogs to do an awful lot of thinking. And some dogs really like to do a lot of thinking. So they have to figure out, well, how do I get it out of here? There are lots of puzzle toys. Go on the internet and put in puzzle enrichment toys for dogs, and you'll see lots of them. There's some by someone named Nina Olofsson from, I think she's from Denmark. And those are amazing toys that the dogs have to take apart to get their food. And it makes dogs really happy to be mentally stimulated.
Stacy, thank you for the call. That raises the question, what's best to feed a dog or a cat? Dry food or I would call it wet food?
The choice of food, really the first choice is what's appropriate for your pet's life stage. So puppies and kittens need one type of food, adolescents need another, mature dogs need another, and senior dogs need another. Right. So you have to look at your life stage. Wet versus dry. With dry food, you get some of that scaling of the teeth that you need to do to keep them clean. But with wet food, some dogs, especially cats, they don't drink enough water. So if they eat wet food, they take in more water. So it's an individual basis.
All right. We have a tweet here from Kristen Rice. She's an owner of a Shiba Inu, which I've never heard of, and I hope I pronounced it correctly, who does not respond to the command, come, even with treats. Hard to get him inside when called.
Well, many dogs don't want to come inside when they're outside, and there are lots of reasons for that. The first is coming inside ends fun, so being outside is fun. But there are a certain subset of dogs that don't come back inside when they perceive that you're about to leave. And these are dogs that may be suffering from separation anxiety. They can tell all the cues that it's not a routine, just go outside and go to the bathroom and come in and we're going to watch TV, but rather perhaps the way you're dressed to go to work or you put your purse on the counter or whatever it is, it means that they're going to be alone, maybe even confined. So one of the things you may need to do is screen your dog for separation anxiety when you're not home. And the best way to do that is set up a video camera somewhere where your dog normally spends his time, and especially near the exit door. The other thing is you can practice and get a robust recall. If coming to you always means good things, then the dog's willing to do it. And you can set this up in your house, have your dog sit and take two steps, hold a treat and say, come. And then have the dog sit and take two steps, come. And so you start with very short distances. And once your dog will come inside at any distance when you call them, you can start phasing out the treats. Every other one, two in a row, and then skip three. And you're going to get a robust come command that way.
Very quickly, we have to take a break, but how do you solve the separation anxiety problem once you discover is the problem?
If a dog has separation anxiety, then the best thing you can do is either consult with your veterinarian or with Dr. Colleen Koch, who is a veterinary behavior resident at the University of Missouri's clinic in Wentzville. And they will set up a treatment program which consists of teaching your dog how to be alone and also may include medication. And it will take a period of time to get your dog used to being left alone, but it's a very, very treatable condition.
Or just never leave.
Or you can just never leave. Yeah.
Thank you for that. We'll take a break and come back and continue our conversation about animal behavior. Our guest is Dr. Deborah Horwitz, veterinary behaviorist and veterinarian with Veterinary Behavior Consultations. Back to continue this conversation, take more of your calls in a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our conversation with Dr. Deborah Horwitz, veterinary behaviorist. We have a question here that came in via email, doctor, that says, and it's a typical one, I guess, my 10-year-old 10-pound dog is getting more aggressive by the day towards the mail delivery person. She hears the mail slot move. She growls, runs to the window, snarling, usually slipping on the hardwood floors. and slamming herself into the wall before attacking the window. Mail delivery is never at the same time, so this is a difficult problem to solve. What do you think?
I would suspect that this dog probably also barks out the window at people going by. And one of the things that dogs learn when they bark out the window at people going by is that they go away. The dog doesn't realize they're going to go away anyways, so that when something stays, that makes them work harder because the reward is that whatever it is left. So the mailman stays, but not only does he stay, he or she makes noise and puts things into your house. So the dog may find that particularly problematic. If you have a mail slot that allows the mail to come into your house, you could consider putting a box of treats next to the mail slot and ask your mail person if they would drop in a treat with the mail. So now you would change your dog's perception of the mail to, oh my gosh, we're all going to die because someone's coming to our house to, oh, here comes cookies. And if you aren't able to do that, you could do the same yourself if you're home. And that would be as soon as you hear the mailbox, you either run with your pet and have something really, really delectable, maybe a tiny piece of chicken or something like that. And as the dog is barking, you say, the mailman's here, yippee! And you give him a little treat, and you repeat that over and over to when the mailman comes, hopefully, your dog's going to turn and look at you and go, the mailman's here, yippee! Where's my chicken? So we really want to change that underlying emotion.
All right. Speaking of running to the door with a dog, Pat and Glenn Carbon has a question concerning exercise. Let's take that call now. Pat, go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, Dr. Deborah. It's a privilege talking to you.
Thank you.
I have two English Springer Spaniels. They're seniors, and they know when I'm walking in and out of the door. They stay in the house calmly, but when I grab the leash, they know it's their time and they're up and ready to go. Now Molly's 14 and Bubba's 12, and I run them through the woods and take them on the trails, and I throw tennis balls out in the lake that they love to jump after and swim. But I noticed that Molly, the older female, she you know, sometimes afterwards she's limping for a while and her joints get sore. But if I ever leave the house without her, she just looks brokenhearted, like I've abandoned her. And, you know, even though I know she's sore and hurting, is there a point when you just got to say no to your dog and not run them and not let them play? And, you know,
that's a very good question. I understand what your concerns are with your senior Molly. Dogs like Molly and Bubba, English Springer Spaniels, were bred to go hunting. And so their demeanor when they go outside and they're retrieving or they're swimming is, let's go, let's go, let's go, because you wouldn't want a hunting dog that said, nah, I'm not doing it, I'm too tired today. And that's part of their spirit, and that's part of what we love about them. So sometimes we need to intervene when we know that they've had enough. The first thing you should do is contact your veterinarian, however. There may be some pain medication that can help her. There may be the need to lose weight. There may be things that we can do to ease her arthritis. Some dogs that have arthritis, if indeed she does, may need to be treated every day. But you're correct. You do need to cut back on her activities. You could try taking a leash with you. And while Bubba runs a little more, after Molly has just run a little bit, you leash her up and you put her through a paces of some tricks. Some sits or rollovers or shake or high five or whatever that might be, she still gets some quality time with you. She gets mental exercise and perhaps just the physical exercise. It's enough to keep her active and her muscles strong or whatever without causing her pain. So I contact your veterinarian. I think we can help.
You know, we have a number of calls and so many of them are dealing with one issue, and that is the cats and dogs relieving themselves in the wrong place. How do you train them to be sure to use the litter box and not do their business on the living room rug?
Well, when we're talking about cats, it is one of the most common problems we see, the cats not using their litter box. Contrary to what most of us believe, it's not being spiteful, it's not being mean. It's almost always about their toilet. So we have to think of the litter box as the place they go to eliminate. Most humans are pretty particular about that. So if we go into a restroom that's pretty dirty, we may leave unless we really need to use the bathroom. So the very first thing to look at is where the litter box is, how big the litter box is, how much material is inside, how often do you scoop out the waste, and how often do you empty, wash, and refill that litter box? Because cats like a very clean litter box. The general rule of thumb is there should be one box per cat plus one in multiple locations, which brings me to the second reason that often cats in a multiple cat household may not use their litter box, and that's lack of access. Cats do live in groups, but within those big groups, they have preferred associates, cats they like, that they groom and they sleep with, and they have others that they avoid. They don't like them. And if in the household they're living in, they can't pick those people we picked and brought in there. And if one of the cats they want to avoid may be keeping them from getting to the litter box, if all the litter boxes, that one per cat plus one, are all in one room, you only have one toileting area. So the two big things I would look at is the cleanliness and location of the litter box. And then I would look at, in a multi-cat household, how can these cats access their toilet?
They're making a statement when
they're not making a statement. They're relieving a biological need. I think that's the most important thing. Your cat has to go to the bathroom. And they know they would prefer to go in loose material. That's what a cat wants. If they're not using it, then they're telling you, there's some reason I can't use my toilet. Either it's too dirty or it's too far. If I'm an old cat, just like Molly, I can't go down two flights of stairs to go to the bathroom. So instead of looking at it as something they did to make you angry, look at it as, oh my gosh, they really need to go to the bathroom, and somehow they're not using the bathroom they used to use before. What could be wrong?
So if you have a cat, or a dog for that matter, that is doing the business on the rug, is there any particular way other than what you've just suggested with the litter box to de-incentivize them to do that?
Well, cats and dogs have different reasons for going to the bathroom in the house in an unwanted place. Cats would like a litter box, but if their toilet is not accessible, if you work in a 20-story building and the only toilet is down 20 flights of stairs, there may be times where it might be difficult to get there. For dogs, when dogs eliminate indoors, there are two questions to ask. Does it happen when I'm home? Or does it happen when I'm gone? And if you can't tell, then you need to do a search every day. Dogs that eliminate in the house when you're gone may have separation distress, or they could have thunderstorm phobias, and they're frightened, and they eliminate. Dogs that eliminate when you're home may not have adequate house training. So the most important thing is to realize that dogs eliminate most commonly after they eat and drink. Dogs drink most of their water after they eat. If you're having a house soiling problem, feed your pet two times a day. And within 20 to 30 minutes after they eat, make sure you take them outside. Go outside with them. And when they go to the bathroom, reward them. You can't reward them when they come back in the house, because what you want to reward, as we say in behavior lingo, is we want to reward do it here, do it now. But when they come back to the house, you're rewarding coming back inside. So once you've established for the dog that that's what you want them to do, it's just a matter of good supervision and being consistent over time. But one caveat to all of this, either the dog or the cat could have a medical reason. So make sure you've gone to the veterinarian, you had a urine sample checked or a stool sample checked or both, maybe even blood work to be sure they're healthy.
I've always heard that animals of the type that we're talking about do not get jealous. And yet we see and experience a lot that, in fact, a dog, for instance, might get jealous when two people who are showing some affection to each other, the dog wants to be a part of it. When you have two dogs, you're petting one, the other one comes over and wants to be a part of that. That strikes me as being jealous.
It's hard to know the emotions that they feel. We know they're fearful or anxious or aggressive or predatory because we can see the body postures with that. Jealousy is a little bit harder. But if something is good, then an animal's going to want
more.
There's that. And if there aren't any rules for when you get physical interaction or social interaction and when you don't, then why not? Why not try? It is somewhat like when you have a young child and you're talking to your spouse, they suddenly have something really important to tell you because they want to be part of that social interaction, because social interactions are pleasurable. And there is that. Though there is one study that shows us that dogs can tell the difference when one dog gets a much more significantly desirable reward than they do.
Uh-huh.
They can tell.
Well, an emailer writes on this particular subject saying a particular case where the owner is showing affection to a 7-year-old and the dog has nipped at the 7-year-old. That's a different story altogether.
7-year-old child?
Yeah.
Yes. That is, first of all, a problem that should not be taken lightly because dog bites can be very serious. That person, I don't really know enough in this format to tell exactly what's going on, but the first thing I would suggest is that the dog is probably in close proximity at that time, and they should not be. When you're going to be dealing with your 7-year-old, the dog should be on their dog bed, should be somewhere else. But if this is a chronic problem, you should talk to your veterinarian about help, and your veterinarian may be able to refer you to someone who can help you treat that problem, because it should not go untreated. It could be very serious.
We'll go back to the cats now and bring in Marlene, who is calling us from Brentwood. Marlene, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you very much for taking my call. I had a question about countertops. I have two cats, but one is really kind of the major one. Gus will actually get on the countertop, and he's a climber. I mean, I have wonderful climbers, but he actually has gotten onto the microwave and on top of the refrigerator.
Mm-hmm. What kind of climbing things do you have that are just for your cats? Do you have a climbing tree?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, yeah, I have a tree, and I have a multi.
And where are they?
They're in the in my dining room. I have a small home, and they're in the dining room. They're right there. I mean, they love them, but.
When does he want to get up? Cats really like to be up high. One of the reasons they like to be up high is it makes them feel safe. So he may want to get on top of the refrigerator while you're cooking and watch what you do because he feels safe up there. If you don't want him to get up there, then you probably should put something that blocks that space and he won't be able to get up there. Same with the microwave. Very often they want to watch what you're doing. You could consider, if you have room in your kitchen, for a stool where he could sit and watch you but be on an acceptable thing, and then you can train him to it's his place. You can put treats on top of it, reward him when he's on it, so that he can be in your kitchen and up high but not on those undesirable locations.
On the subject of treats for training, let's bring in Beth, who's calling from St. Louis. Beth, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
We just adopted a retired greyhound, and he's doing great. But he seems to be totally unmotivated by treats. So when I'm trying to train him on certain things he never learned in his life as a racer, I don't know what to do to motivate him. He seems completely unmotivated by food. So I was wondering if you could comment on some way.
Sure.
To...
I can do that. First of all animals are motivated by food, because if they didn't eat, there would be quite an adverse outcome for them. But as a racing greyhound, he probably only got his food in select meals and was discouraged from picking up other things, because if he's supposed to be running on the track, if a hot dog ended up on the track or whatever, they don't want the dog to stop, right? So there's that possibility. The other is that if he's satiated, he's met all his caloric needs through the food you give him, then maybe he's truly not hungry. He doesn't want anything else. And the third thing is what you're using is not high enough value. So in order to address those things, there are a couple of options that you have. One option is to train him before you feed him his meal and to use something really high value, like tiny pieces of turkey hot dogs or little pieces of Braunschweig or something like that that's going to motivate him to eat. And he will be hungry because he hasn't eaten his meal. Once he understands what the food is for, then you probably can switch out some lower value foods for some of the higher value foods. But initially, it's like thinking we wouldn't work for a penny a minute, even though at the end of the week we got the same amount of money. But if we were being paid a penny a minute, maybe we wouldn't work. But we want to make sure that if we're going to ask the dog to work, that the pay is worth it. So I would up the ante and make sure he's hungry. And I think you might make progress.
And use that liverwurst. That works wonders.
Oh,
with dogs.
Yeah. They love that. String cheese, too.
Yeah. We have time, I think, for one more call. Let's bring in Donna calling from Lima. Donna, thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
Yes. Hello. Good morning. And thank you. Or afternoon, I guess it is. First, I just want to make a quick comment that you're talking about animals going to the bathroom in the house. And I have a dog who at one time was not comfortable with a gentleman that I was seeing. And she would only go to the bathroom where he hung out. Anyway, that he's gone and that stopped. But anyway, what I was really calling about was I've been a major dog lover all my life. In fact, my mom put my first dog in my crib with me when I was an infant. So I have had many dogs over the years, and I work with some rescues and such. One comment I wanted to make was how hard it is, I think, for us to generalize about how dog behavior works in each dog, because it seems to me that every dog, for the most part, yeah, there's a lot of general rules you can go by to train them, but they're so different from one another, just like people. And the difference being that we are not in their skin, so we can't really know exactly where they come from. And a lot
you
of
make a really good point. You make a really good point. All dogs are individuals, but it is important to realize that there's some generalities about dogs that do hold true. Because just like humans have commonalities of behaviors and emotions, the same can be true with dogs. And there's some things that dogs like to do that I call dog stuff that cats don't like to do. But yes, each dog's an individual, and each dog is going to respond differently to the circumstances of the training, and that's important. But the way we learn and how dogs learn is the same across dogs. But what might motivate them will be different. So you're correct. They are different, but some basic principles do hold true. Thanks so much for your call.
Yes, thank you so much. Our time is up. I wish we had more time. We have a number of calls. Apologies to those folks who called that we can't get to. Do you have a website, Doctor?
Well, what I really wanted to say is I don't actively see patients now. I spend all my time teaching veterinarians and the public about animal behavior. And so there is a new behavior resident who is at the University of Missouri's Wentzville facility, and her name is Dr. Colleen Koch, K-O-C-H. And I will leave her contact details with you, and you can put that up.
We'll put that on our website.
Okay.
Thank you so very much. That's Dr. Deborah Horwitz, veterinary behaviorist. And thank you so much. We have to have you back.
Thanks for having me. It's a lot of fun. I enjoy doing this.
A lot of people are disappointed they didn't get to talk to you. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.